The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
UAB making it official today. Alex Mortensen.
Coach Mortensen is a rising star in college football.
Alex Mortensen.
Please welcome Alex Mortensen.
In terms of expectations, we have high expectations.
Today marks a very important step forward for UAB football, athletics, and the entire university.
We want to develop the right intangibles first. Our dedication to teamwork and competitive spirit need to be in place. And first, relentless effort, okay, discipline, toughness, and poise. It's our objective to create a team built on unity.
This is the Inferno Podcast. The official podcast of UAB Athletics. Blazer fans, this is the place every week for an inside look into UAB Athletics. This episode is brought to you by Pearl River Resort.
Welcome into the Inferno Podcast. Scott Griffin here for Season 2, Episode 18, and we finally got the coach. He's going to be here, Alex Mortensen, the head football coach for the Blazers. We'll talk to him. Of course, the rundown here on what we got for the show is brought to you by Legacy Credit Union. As always, the official credit union of the UAB Athletics. Now, Alex Mortensen, as we said, is on. We'll talk about men's basketball a little bit. Close loss to Troy, but still got a couple of very big games coming up. Women's basketball also finishing out their non-conference, just like the men, as they get ready for conference play, and much more. Remember, you can always follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, however you get it, Facebook, and make sure you like and subscribe and get those notifications so you can check out when the podcast comes out for sure. So we've got a lot to cover with Alex Mortensen, so we'll take a break, come back with more here on the Inferno Podcast. Hang on.
If in life, it's a world of possibilities. If you go for a night out with friends, if you can keep an eye on your money along the way. If you know you have overdraft protection with no fee transfers from savings, when you get a low balance alert, it's easier to say yes to fun. If that sounds good, try Regions Life Banking.
Stay ready for the if in life. Regions Bank embrace the if in life.
Welcome back to the Inferno Podcast. Scott Griffin here. Finally, we are talking to our head football coach, Alex Mortensen, joining us now. Alex, it's great to say that you're the head football coach. That's kind of weird, right?
It is weird, but getting more normal by the hour.
Yeah. So let's give people a perspective of coming in during the year. Boom, you've got to put a hat on, and you weren't overwhelmed. I mean, you win your first game. Before we get into that, just tell me about that week leading up. Was it crazy? Was it difficult? Because suddenly you're the guy everybody's asking questions to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it was a little crazy. And some of that was just managing more. And what does managing more mean? Well, one, you know, I'm the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator, and then there's the head coaching stuff too. And so wearing all three hats, you know, obviously created more, and some of that more was, it's practical things like, you know, having to be on top of maybe a defensive player that's getting injured, you know, and how are we going to handle that, or things of that nature. Some of that is, hey, you have to talk to the press twice on Monday. You have a Monday morning press conference. You have a radio show in the afternoon, and I'm just thinking, my goodness, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's our first and second down plan going to be for Memphis, you know? Right. So those are 2 hours that are normally in your day that kind of you lose. So that part, the time management part, was a little bit of a challenge. And then I think the part you hear a lot of head coaches talk about too is there are a lot of knocks on that door too, where you know you think you've got X, Y, Z scheduled for a certain time period, and then here come the surprises that maybe you don't plan for.
Yeah. So it was kind of interesting to me. And a lot of teams can come out and be hot at first, but you had this interesting bookend kind of huge wins. The first one,
right,
against a team that was at that time slated to go in the playoffs, which was crazy. Memphis, obviously, top 25. And then the last one on the road, 40 guys not making the trip, you know, against Tulsa. And you win that one. It's kind of an amazing period there as your head coach. You kind of saw a microcosm of an entire year.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, a pretty good roller coaster in some ways. But, yeah, you know, beating a top 25 team, you know, early and then getting the first win on the road in 3 years, it was, you know, was really a great accomplishment for the seniors. And I think that was when that whole thing – everything happened. Really, the focus was like, hey, let's try to send these guys out the right way and help to give them the best experience possible. So they did two things, both of which, you know, hadn't been done, you know, for a little while. So that was cool for them. And I thought, you know, that last game was pretty neat just to see, you know, the guys that hung in there and they fought and competed all the way to the end.
So you learned a ton being a head coach just in that. What a resume to have to get the job and end up getting it, because, again, a ranked win, a win against difficult circumstances, a couple of games where you didn't perform as well as you wanted.
Yeah.
Your team bounces back from that. I mean, you had a whole deal there, I mean, as far as emotions and what happens in a football season.
Well, yeah, no, and I think the biggest thing, you know, was I think there are always leadership challenges in these roles, and I think that was the biggest thing. Is like, hey, to have a big win like that, but then go into a bye week, which in some ways maybe we lost some emotional momentum, you know. And there's probably things we can do to manage that better in the future, which we'll learn from that. But to lose some of that momentum, if you will, emotionally, and then and not sustain the success we wanted to, you know, over a little stretch, but then hey, can we keep them in it? And because at that point it's easy for staff to quit and start looking at the job cycle. It's easy for players to get their eyes in the portal and quit. And they've got their agents pulling at them, telling them, you know, I shouldn't say their agents, but
representatives,
but some of them do, you know, and there's some good agents out there, I'm sure, you know, but at telling them, hey, you don't need to play in this last game, you know, and you've got the film you need, and what are you playing for? So I think there were some, you know, just keeping the core group together was, you know, was a challenge. But really, the players did that too, and that was what was neat. Is the one thing we've kind of been trying to, you know, coach our guys to do is, hey, learn how to be a player-led team too, and which is more difficult because usually when you're a leader, you've earned respect first through your work ethic and your performance and the way you conduct your business and your character. But when teams are put together through the transfer portal, which most are now at a higher rate, it takes time to earn respect. Yeah. And even talking to some of our players, they go, man, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes to be a vocal leader when I feel like I'm still getting to know a lot of these guys and maybe I haven't earned their respect yet. So my point is that what was neat down the stretch, and particularly the last game, was to see some guys turn into that. You know, and it was like they didn't give up or quit on the season either. So that was really rewarding to see.
As you look back now, and it hasn't been a vast amount of time, but I'm curious to see, because to me, I could argue sitting in a seat that I'm sitting in, that the ending win was perhaps a lot more important than that first one from the standpoint of everything going against you and you get a win. And talk about it from your personal perspective. I know you said the seniors and all that's great. But you having confidence in what your plan was to week and then seeing the result like that.
Yeah, it was great. And, you know, not to dwell on the negative part, but, like, you know, there are things in the games where we didn't win that were very frustrating, you know, that because, you know, some of these games we did a good job, like North Texas. You know, I'm thinking on offense, like I think there was approximately 480 yards. Maybe they had 500. We nearly matched them in third down production, but we turned the ball over, you know. And so, just to know that you had some unforced errors, but you did a lot of things really well that a lot of other people weren't able to do against them and move the ball to the rate we did. So those things just they drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. They absolutely drive you nuts, and they're things that we can't eliminate and are gonna and will work to eliminate, you know, in the future. But personally, I think the biggest thing is, like, I think what, you know, has been, I guess, ingrained in me for a long time is, like, don't quit. Like, fight to the end. And so that's what was kind of on my mind is, like, I don't know what the future holds here. I know I want to be here.
Yeah.
And I love it here. But that might be out of my control. But come hell or high water, like, we're going to fight to the bitter end. And it's probably a little bit overly dramatic, but I even sent our staff the I said, look, I know the fate of the world isn't at stake here, but I sent them the Winston Churchill never surrender speech,
right.
You know,
never quit,
you know, yeah. two weeks before near the end of the season. And that was just, it's kind of the mindset.
We got to do those things and they get a history lesson.
Yeah, that's right.
As they go. But yeah, I just thought that was an amazing finish. Did you ever, and this is probably an unfair question, did you ever know that you had the job before you actually knew that you had the job? Or did you have an inkling? Did you go? And I know you had to prep like that because you've already told
sure.
me. I had to prepare.
Right.
Which I think was very key in getting it, by the way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, postseason, you know, I think it was, there were a lot of things that were up in the air. And I obviously don't want to, you know, disclose too much. I want to respect, you know, the privacy of the school and Mark and Ingram and Dr. Watts. But there probably was a point prior to the announcement where I knew, you know, that we're going to have an opportunity to do it, and I was pretty excited about it. And at the same time, I was asked not to say anything, so I kept my mouth shut.
Right. Now, you'd always talked about being under Nick Saban, which we talked about that, and you had a chance, I think, if I remember correctly, to discuss some things with him before. And then you told me, I'm going to lean on him now for sure. So I'm not going to ask you what you learned from him, because it's pretty evident in the DNA of all the coaches that have coached under him. So what did you learn about yourself not under this Saban tutelage here in this last half year and now as you're working as the head coach?
Right. I think, man, what I learned about myself, I think in some respects, it's, you know, it's not to be overconfident, but it's like been doing this for a while, and probably there's probably more things more prepared for than maybe even I realized, and so that was a positive. And then I think the thing, and I've anyone that's listened, not that many people are listening to me talk, but anyone that has, I'm being a little bit redundant, the organization thing is a big deal, you know.
I
it's in terms of, and it's in every level from time management to delegation to, you know, having systems and processes in place that everyone's going to follow. I think those things are really, really important. Otherwise, you can end up spinning your wheels or just taking on more than you can handle. And so I think, you know, every phase of the year, you know, having those things defined, I've learned that's going to be really, it's really important for me. It's probably really important for anyone, though.
Yeah. So if I looked at your plan, or if I could visually see that, I'm sure a ton of it would be, you know, Saban-esque, right? And then, but you get other influences too.
Yeah.
How much would be your take on something? Maybe
right.
Somebody gave you an outline of this particular part of running a program or organization, but I'm tweaking it to my way.
Right. Well, I know one thing. I mean, this is something that hit me early on. When I first got into coaching, I thought, well, you know, let me go back and think about what are the common denominators of maybe the best coaches I feel like I've had. And I thought there were really three things. I thought they were great teachers, and some of them, were, you know, more one thing than the other.
Okay? On field or off field? Both?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Great teachers, you know, both, you know, in the meeting room and on the field. There's a teaching component. And the way I kind of framed it in my mind is, you know, people are motivated different ways. And I'm certainly not a sports psychologist by any stretch of the imagination, but some people are what you would consider intrinsically motivated. They have a fire burning in them. They don't need to light a fire under them as much. And if you have someone like that, if you can teach them, they're probably gonna be pretty good because they've
very
already.
Young.
Yeah, that's right.
You know.
Yep. Yeah. If you can just.
You just gotta point them.
Yes. Teach them, instruct them, teach them the game, teach them the reads, footwork, fundamentals. But that guy didn't need a lot of motivation because he's self-motivated. He's a self-starter. And then you've got some folks that maybe are a little bit more extrinsically motivated. And so I think those people respond really well to you know, demand, you know, a high demand being placed on them. They need a high demand, you know, a high standard to be set. And so I think about some of the best coaches I've been around, they're very demanding of, yes, of the people around them. And then I think if we're all being honest, even those of us that are self-motivated, even we need a little bit of that too, you know? And so I thought, okay, be a great teacher, be really demanding. And then in some of my coaches in the past, we used to talk about confront and demand. You know, don't be afraid to confront an issue and confront a player. It doesn't mean you have to scream and cuss and, right, and you know, grab their face mask, but confront an issue when it comes up. Don't dance around it. And then the third thing is relationship. You know, I thought the best coaches, a lot of the coaches I around, you know, was around that had an effect and impact on me and the people around me, they had a really good relationship with their players. And I use the word relationship on purpose because it's not always a friendship. You know, it's a relationship first. And this story I tell a lot is my, you know, my 11th grade history class was a U.S. history class, and my offensive coordinator taught it. And he was also my quarterback coach. And, you know, I was doing fine in the class. I was doing well on my tests and my papers. And then he would pretty regularly, almost daily, give a 5-point quiz that probably didn't have a huge bearing on our grade. Like, I probably could have not studied for a lot of them.
Right.
And done fine.
And been okay, right.
But because I respected him, I studied for those. And I prepared for him, just out of respect. And I think that, to me, you know, that tells me a lot. Like, I think when you have a respect for someone that you're playing for, you don't want to let them down. And so, there's a bigger part of that worldview, you know, what I believe in. Won't get into all that right now. But that alone, you know, leads me to want to have a relationship with our players.
Right.
But it all certainly makes you a more effective coach. So to me, teaching, demanding, and relationship are three big deals. And so those are things when you ask about things, hey, what are things that maybe, you know, you've learned about yourself or that would be a part of your program that maybe are separate from, you know, someone, you know, handing out, hey, here's our philosophy, or someone I work for. Those are three things that went into year one. You know, as soon as I started coaching, those are things I really believed in. And so, you know, but along the way, I've learned an awful lot from other people, you know, and have tried to take the best things of them.
Yeah. And you learned a ton at the highest level, and most people know your story. So many years at Alabama, nine, I think.
Nine, yeah.
You know, and then now you're at a little bit different level, still Division I football, but, you know, you've kind of figured that out too, because there are differences. So how do you navigate that now as the head coach and you're calling the shots and you've got this particular buffet here, may not be the filet mignon, but you got this buffet to try to win at your level in your league?
Right. I think we got a great buffet here, yeah. And I love it here, and I think we can, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I think we can, you know, do some great things with this program, and I'm really excited about that part. And I think you speak to something, though. I don't think look, I think there are principles in leadership and in football that carry everywhere from youth football to the pros to all levels of college football. And I think there are some things that are very different, you know, at every
Absolutely.
Spot. And I think that, you know, you can't just copy and paste from one place to the next. I think that's a huge error. And I think you've got to look at every problem like it's a different problem to solve and say, okay, how do we best solve this problem? And I think that's one of the things about Coach Saban. I think some people would say, well, do you just do exactly what you did there? There's, like, let's call it 80% of it, 90% of it, you can do here. You can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the foundational principles.
Fundamentals, right?
Yeah. You build a program on, and even the intangible qualities you want to create in your players and building a team. But then there are other things that might be different. And I think that's what I came to appreciate about him so much, is I felt like he was a great problem solver. You know, even as you saw the landscape in college football change, you watch him adapt. You watched him adapt his offense in 2014, change and grow that. You know, change the way he played defense in some respects. So he was always assessing, okay, what's the problem? How do we solve it? Okay, a recruiting rule changes. How do we solve it? Okay, we're getting beat on in an area. How do we solve it? So I think you've got to take that mindset of, okay, let's assess what's in front of us. I worked at New Mexico Highlands for a year. They asked me about that the other day. We won 8 games. It's the only 8-win season they've had there since 1999.
Wow.
You know, but that problem is different than this problem. Yeah. You know, yeah. So yeah. I think that's the biggest thing is being willing to adapt to what's in front of you. I think it's really important.
Yeah, and to your point, no better indicator than loathing the spread, screaming about it at every interview opportunity, to becoming a master at the
that's
spread.
Right.
So, you know, case in point, he did that. So, so now you're here, and we were kind of talking a little bit before. Alex Mortensen, our guest, by the way, head coach, football coach. And I asked you how many scholarships you have, and you honestly say, I don't know because I don't know who's staying, who's going, and just kind of talk about the clock to give people an understanding of the ending times of school starting and transfer portal and all that. It's a difficult thing to navigate.
It is difficult, and I think any coach right now, most would tell you if they're being honest, it is a challenge. And again, for anyone that did, I know I talked about this at our introductory press conference last week, but when you got into coaching initially, or when I got into it, it was very clean.
Sure.
You knew, you had every position on your board, and you had prospects underneath that board, and you had them ranked, and then above the position group, so wide receiver, you know, might be outside receivers, inside receivers, offensive line, tackles, guards, center, so on and so forth. And then you have based on the projection of what's leaving your team, you would have a number up there of how many you're going to replace them with. And that was pretty easy. And then sometimes if you knew you were going to – rarely did you have a guy transfer, but if you did, then you might be interested, do we replace him with an older player, a junior college player, or maybe another transfer, which there weren't as many. Very easy process, very predictable, relatively predictable. Now, to contrast that with what we're dealing with now – we are going to have a transfer portal, obviously, that's going to open January 2nd. And so right now we know how many players we have on our team, but we don't know exactly how many will get into the portal. And some have said, I'm going in, so you could maybe subtract a number. Some of those guys will change their mind and want to come back. So, and then you've got some that say, I'm sitting squarely on the fence. And then some are saying, I'm coming back. And some of those guys that say they're coming back
may not.
And they've got all the way to... By the way, they got all the way till January 16th to play with that. So that's challenging, particularly when school's going to start in January. And I think our drop dead date is like the 18th or the 19th. So there's not a big window from the 16th to the 19th. So that's the challenge. So just hypothetically, imagine you had 10 guys leave your team on the 16th and jump in. You've got to have a plan now as to what are you going to do with that. And I think now, consequently, you could end up making some really rushed decisions in recruiting and evaluation. So those are the things that, you know, probably are the biggest challenges right now.
Yeah, and it's hard to get coaching on that from yourself because they're unknowns. There's nothing to get advice over, right? I mean, it just makes it difficult. And the high school athlete, that I know that's how you want to build.
Yes.
But I'm not even sure how much you can build this first year. I mean, what do you tell them?
Right.
Hey, can you hang on till January 15th?
Yeah. You know what I mean? No, I mean, we'll go, and we do want to talk about that high school thing. The other thing I failed to mention, though, is there's no May portal this year. So, you know, I think a lot of people are excited when the May portal went away because they go, hey, it'll be a little less chaotic. We can get on the road and recruit high school players instead of hosting visits and this, that, the other. But now that this window is so tight for this portal, if you don't get it right, it's a little concerning that you're going to have it's going to be a little harder to fix your roster in May.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you don't nail it, it could be a bad situation. And so I think that's on everybody's mind. Now, in terms of the high school part, you know, that's part of the reason I'm excited about this job. And all of us in coaching, you know, we put pressure on ourselves to win, obviously, and set high standards for ourselves. But I think the nature in which, let's just call it for what it is, there's not a lot of patience, and we're not particularly patient people either, let's just be honest, but that pushes you sometimes to the portal more. And if you said, hey, you know what, if we're going to take a 5-year plan here, I think you would recruit high school a lot more.
Absolutely.
And that's part of why I'm excited about this job, is our intention is to try to do that. We feel like there are a lot of really good high school players in the area, in this state and then in the bordering states, that are all inside a 5-hour radius. So we really want to build it that way as best we can. Now, what will that do in terms of short-term success? It's hard to project. But in terms of long-term health of a program, I think it could really be fruitful. So that's kind of on our mind. Now, in terms of this year's class, you know, I got hired officially, you know, in that December period. So we've got some ground to make up in February. Sure. We didn't take a lot of guys, but, you know, we're hopeful that, you know, there's still some really good players out there.
Yeah, and there probably are.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
That there's always some fault that's correct. Harder to diagnose, but certainly it can happen. And I was going to say, yes, you don't have to get on an airplane. You can just fill the car up.
Yeah.
And everybody can go hit spots, and you've got a really good chance to be really good.
You do. Yeah, you do. And I think, you know, the one thing that I'm used to in the recruiting process is that there's used to be a little bit, and there still can be if you do it, you know, a little bit more traditionally, a longer runway to signing day and getting to know a player. You know, we always had a checklist of, hey, we want to evaluate the film. We want to evaluate the highlight film. We want to watch games. And then we want to call, you know, we want to talk to the high school coach, the people around them in their life, and get a better understanding of the person. We want to get on their campus. One, we want to get to see how they are in their environment.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is you want to verify things in person, verified height, verified speed, you know, verified measurements, and then get them on your campus at a camp. So the other part too is that allows for a very thorough evaluation. Again, let's do compare and contrast. You go to the portal thing we just talked about. You're talking about potentially making some decisions just over the phone. You know, if you can't get them here on a visit in time, and you might be right, you might not be. So it's and there are ways to gather information and do the work and yeah. and all that. But I think that's a potentially another advantage of the high school recruiting too.
Talk about summer camps briefly. That's going to be huge, especially yeah. in your first year, getting kids on, introducing them to the facilities, to yourself, to whomever the staff is going to be at the time, whatever. Very key in yeah. changing a philosophy because, you know, Trent has his beliefs and thoughts. I don't think he just hammered the state of Alabama like it sounds like you will. So there's a little difference in getting people over here and seeing what we got over here.
Yeah, and I don't want to speak for Trent. I think if you were to talk to him, I think currently he would probably talk about doing yeah. that going yeah. forward, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
But yeah, no, I mean, that's something. So the camps will be really important. You know, they're going to be really important. And, you know, our goal is to get a calendar done soon and get those camp dates out early and start promoting them quickly as we can and try to drive as many players and prospects there as possible.
All right. So I know we got lightning round coming up here in a few minutes, but so such important stuff on football. Ryder Burton's been on here a couple of times now. To have a guy that's played winning football be in your corner has got to be impressive for you. And I'm not saying he's going to be the starter. I'm sure you're going to have fresh eyes for everybody. But to have a guy that has played winning football be here and to start and go, at least we have a quarterback that's played under me when I've called plays for five games, is huge, I would think. In
yeah.
the start of a – not that quarterback's more important than anything else, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's a great deal. I mean, I'm really, really excited about Ryder, really think highly of him. I think he's a great young player. And so, you know, knowing he's committed and wants to be here and we have the kind of relationship we have is really encouraging. And I think he can also help rally – and recruiting and
yes.
and the guys the guys on our team currently. So I think it's a really good thing to have in place right now in a situation like this. And yeah, to your point too, I mean, you know, we got Nate Rogers here who is a really good young player too that is ready to take a step. And Adrian Posse is a guy that, you know, at that position people haven't seen a lot of that's really talented and he's working to take steps too. So we're really excited about all three of them. But yeah, to have a guy like Ryder who, you know, has started and beat a top 25 team and played really good football and has been in the offense it's a really, really good deal.
This is the unfair question part. So staff, because everybody wants to know about staff, and I know that's as fluid almost as players. Where are you on that? What do you think it'll look like? Will it still be fluid, you know, as yeah. you get ready for spring or?
Yeah, no, it's something we're working through currently and there's really no timetable on it. A lot of, you know, you ask about, you know, do you talk to other people or other coaches and a lot of people have really encouraged me to like, hey, don't get in too big of a hurry
right.
on that. And some guys have told me, hey, I took the job and the next day I I had eight guys on my staff immediately. I greatly regret that, you know, because sometimes you want to be able to hit the ground running and recruiting with that group, and that can be tempting. But, you know, and then some folks have done that and it's worked out well. So I think the key is, however you do it, just make sure you get the right people. And I think we're committed to making sure we have the right people here. And we already do have some really good people here too. And so that's, you know, but however we do that, whatever the timetable is, I think we're going to have a really good group.
So if you're looking for someone, whether it's 3 years from now, whatever, do you have a DNA you want each coach to have, not by position, but what do they need to do that is going to attract you to have them as a staff member?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are, you know, people break these things up different. You know, some people say in college, hey, you need to be able to be a master of your position, recruit, or bring great schematic knowledge, mm-hmm. and try to hit in all three of those areas. And some guys lean more towards one way or the other. And you know, I was like, I was thinking about the movie Rocky. You know, the first Rocky, when he's on a date with Adrian, and they're on the ice rink, and he tells her, "I got gaps, you got gaps, but together we got no gaps." And so that's the other part of it is managing the strengths and weaknesses of the staff too. Is like, hey, you might have someone that's really strong as a recruiter and really strong at owning their position, but maybe they don't bring, you know, 30,000 foot schematic knowledge, and someone else might be really good in recruiting and schematic knowledge, maybe not as good on. So you're trying to balance those things, I think, when you're putting a staff together, to make sure you don't have any gaps. And then, you know, it's interesting just talking to my high school coach, who's, I think, is about to probably play in his ninth state championship in like 14 years over in Georgia. But, you know, one thing he told me was that, you know, competence is very important, being competent at your job. But over the years, he has felt like character and staff cohesiveness are more and more important to him every year he coaches. And he's had more issues when they've lacked in those areas than the competence area. As long as someone's got enough intelligence and work ethic, a lot of times they can make up.
They can figure that out.
If they've got to grow a little bit. But having the right kind of people and people that work well together is really important. And a lot of times those are kind of like character flaws or character traits. And so I think that those are other really important things to consider too.
Yeah. Will you have a say-so in scheduling? You'll give an opinion?
In regards to scheduling opponents?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Well, right now, that's something we've not even discussed. So I'm sure my bosses are in control of that right now.
And you're going to have to play the money game, a couple of them, whatever. So.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. But, maybe at some point in the future, that's something we'll have a conversation about. I did hear Urban Meyer on a podcast say here recently that I think he said Earl Bruce was getting advice from, I can't remember, it may have been Woody Hayes or Bear Bryant, but they told him, you better make sure you're involved with scheduling.
Yeah. Scheduled to lose your job almost. But you do have Samford.
That's right.
Coming on. I would love to see you play the Troys and the Jack States and all that. Maybe not all at the same time, but I think that's important. Do you have a philosophy on scheduling?
Right. You know, I think the biggest thing is, like, as a competitor, I think you got to take the mindset, like, whoever we play, wherever we play, I'm like, we're going to go compete and prepare to win. And I think, you know, quoting Coach Saban again, but sometimes he'd say, hey, look, sometimes it's not your job to judge, you know? And so if I don't have say in the schedule, it's not my job to judge. It's my job to control what I can control and let's go try to compete and beat the teams that are on it. You know, I know people have different philosophies on these things. A positive, when you play these teams that are in state, you know, it can generate some fun rivalries.
Sure.
And then I think on top of it, you know, there's probably a financial component where you can probably drive the gate up, you know, because there's a lot of people that can get to those games. So a lot that those are really positive things. And then some people say, hey, you got, a lot to lose and not as much to gain from those games. I don't think you can look at it that way. I think you can't play scared, and can't live in fear. No. So I think those are really good opportunities.
Absolutely, great opportunities. One final question on football, then we'll get to the lightning round that I forgot to ask about players and rosters. So when you're looking at a player and what they can do, and I think the perfect example is Lindenborg, who played basketball, got developed by Andy Kennedy.
Right.
Became really good, obviously. Probably kept him a year longer than he should have. Then he goes to Michigan. You're kind of in the same boat. If you develop your high school players and they get good, they may go get the check from somewhere else. That's just impossible for, you know, UAB to write that check, just like it was for Lindenborg. Any thought process to that? Do you think, as of now, and I know that can be fluid and change, you just got to keep pumping the high school guys in here for when you do develop them well, they may leave or they may stay loyal and stay. Who knows what it is?
Right.
Because you're at a weird level.
Yeah.
You know, you're different from Alabama that's going to probably keep everybody they want.
Well, I think, you know, there are a few things, you know, and that come to my mind in response to that question. One is, you know, I think back to when we had a different problem, but it was similar. We had juniors coming out for the draft early.
Right.
Okay. And what coach used to tell them a lot of the time, I don't want to speak for him, but this is my best recollection. A lot of times if they were second round pick or better, he'd tell them, you should go. It's the best thing for you. You know, and he was pretty honest with them. You know, mm-hmm. if they had an opportunity to go earn a lot of money, get drafted high, start working on their second contract, all those things. And then if it was later, then there got to be some gray area. And a lot of times you tell them, hey, I don't think you should come out. And some of the guys that went against them paid for it. You know, they'd be a late round pick or they'd be an undrafted free agent. And that's not always the worst thing. There's guys that can play themselves out of that. But had they come back for their senior year, they were going to project to get slotted quite a bit higher.
That initial money might have been
initial money and then
significant.
Yeah. Yes. And then also probably higher likelihood of playing, likelihood of their second contract. So my point is that I think there's a short-term and long-term mindset here. And I think that's one thing that's easy for players to lose sight of is that if I'm only thinking about taking the big money now, but I have aspirations to play professionally. And if I come back to UAB and I'm playing in a system that I know and I'm a returning starter and now I'm going to be a leader on the team, is that more beneficial long-term as opposed to risking going and learning a new system, having to earn a starting role, having to become a leader, which might actually hurt my opportunity at the professional level where I'm going to make far more, you know, over a long period of time. So I think it's important that guys have, you know, both short-term and long-term thinking. And my objective, so here's the other part of answering that question. My objective is I hope that we can work to raise money through our community and through the institution to where, you know, okay, maybe in some cases we don't match what school X is doing, but maybe in the short term for a guy that I just described that's already a good player and that wants to play in the NFL, you know what, I can be comfortable here at UAB. I can put some money away and, you know, have a good foundation set financially, but I can also work towards that long-term goal here too, maybe better than if I leave.
Yeah,
so
that's
our objective.
And the NFL knows where UAB is, by the way. Brian Thomas, Roddy White.
There
have been some guys.
Look, Tajon Palmer was going to leave. I got here in 2023, and Tajon was thinking about leaving in the spring portal. And, you know, I looked him in the eye and said, look, man, if you stay, I'm going to do everything I can to help you get drafted. And, you know, he would have been likely going into a situation where he would have been risking a lot, learning a new offense, getting to know a new quarterback, all those things. And, you know, he ended up getting drafted and got an opportunity to play pro ball. And so I think, I just think that we can create that here. I really do.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's go to lightning round. We got some fun things. You've done this before. But maybe, and it may be some of the same questions, but maybe not. So where do you like to eat? Where do you like to go?
If it's got Mexican anywhere in the name.
Oh, really?
I'm a huge fan of Mexican food.
Why is that?
I've always loved Mexican food.
I mean,
I like hot, spicy, and I like steak, so I can get it all. I get hot, spicy, and steak.
Do you have a favorite Mexican here?
Oh, man.
There's a lot of them.
There's a bunch. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't go wrong.
Yeah. All right. When you are getting away from football, what are you doing? Not that you ever really do, but if you do for a few minutes or an hour.
I like to work out, and that's about it.
That's it?
I don't.
Come on, man.
I need more hobbies, but I don't hunt. I don't fish.
I don't either. You golf?
No. I should.
Fans would love that, by the way.
I should probably pick it up, but I don't golf.
But you're getting a lift in every day, or pretty much?
Not right now, but I would.
A great you got a gym right down on the first floor.
I know. I need to pick it back up. But to me, a great day is if I can do a bunch of football and work out and eat Mexican, then I'm pretty happy.
Then you're good.
I'm pretty happy. Yeah.
You're pretty simple.
Yeah, I am.
So do you like to travel? Do you like or not really? Is it all football? And it may be something as geeky as, no, I love breaking down film, man.
Yeah,
on how to attack a defense. That gets me going.
I really do. I mean, that to me, I mean, it's I love the strategy of the game. I mean, that's part of, I think, why football got in my blood is, like, when I was a kid, I loved strategy. I even loved playing chess, you know. So it's like I felt like football combines all those elements. And so I really do love – I love the football part, you know. I like history. I think history is interesting. Like, I love throwing on a, you know, quick documentary about history or podcast and listen to that. But, you know, and then I think I probably would like to travel. I just, you know, outside of recruiting, I don't travel a lot, you know. But
it sounds like it would be nice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite history story? Do you have a certain thing you like? You like wars? You like anything historical? Or
yeah, I'll just
kind of, I'm a war book guy, you know?
Okay, yeah. I'll jump through different time periods. You know, I mean, I might, you know, I might go, okay, let's, you know, it might be the 1800s. It might be the Viking Age. It might be, you know, whatever. I'll just kind of jump into a time period and stay there for a while.
What grabs you about it? Just,
I don't know.
To try to learn something?
I think sometimes I think there's maybe a little bit of entertainment value. You know, I think I'm just actually entertained. I think I do like the learning because, you know, that whole thing, like, you can learn from history, it repeats itself,
sure,
whatever.
Sure.
Human nature is still kind of the same. I also think what it does, it gives you an appreciation. Like, there's a little bit of gratitude too, because, you know, I think we've got it. I can just, speaking for myself, I think I've got it. I've been very blessed, you know, to have great parents, a great mom and dad, to grow up the way I've grown up. And I think you can see that when you look, you don't have to look very far. And then especially if you look around the world, you go, man, I've got it pretty good. And then when you go back and look through history, mm-hmm, and think about some of the hardships people have faced, you know, I think it can make you grateful. And two, it can challenge you a little bit to say, man, did I really complain about the air conditioning yesterday? You know,
right.
So
they didn't have it,
let's
here,
go,
yeah,
man. Like, yeah, pick it up a little. So, I think that's one of the reasons too.
You were a pretty good quarterback in high school, by the way. And did you have a guy that you thought, man, that's the cat I like playing like? Or,
man, I was there were a bunch of them. You know, growing up when I was a kid, typical front runner. The Dallas Cowboys were very good, so I really liked watching Troy Aikman. And then
that's a pretty good one.
And then I thought John Elway was a guy I loved watching. He had some unreal physical traits. You know, I mean, a lot of power, a lot of arm power. I don't know if people really understand.
Unbelievable arm power.
Unbelievable.
I've seen it in person.
Yeah.
The hardest thrower I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Would you say that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
easily.
Right up. I mean, incredible. Favre was fun to watch. He played, you know, pretty reckless, but fun to watch. And, you know, so those are some guys that, you know, Mike Vick was like the worst guy to get drafted by the Falcons because it was like, you can't emulate him. He was so unique, you know, but he was really entertaining to watch there and growing up in Georgia. So, yeah, I mean, that whole class of quarterbacks was really a lot of fun. And then, of course, as I, you know, getting a little bit older, you know, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady,
sure,
that crew. So I didn't have one. I really love watching all those guys.
Describe yourself as a quarterback, if I looked at your film.
Oh, man.
Be honest.
Well, I'm trying to recruit players better than me. So
yeah,
that's the most honest I could be. But, you know, I think
– could you move a little bit?
I'm a decent athlete. You know, I mean, I probably – you know, I'm definitely not going to be mistaken with Michael Vick. But, you know, I was probably a better athlete than people realize. Like, at my best, I broad jumped like 10 feet 2 inches. And,
okay,
you know, I could power clean and jump and sprint a little bit. But I wasn't wasn't like an elite runner or anything like that, but had some quickness. And but I really was, if I was going to beat you, I was going to probably beat you with my arm and my mind, you know, first. And but yeah, needed some good people around me too. And I was fortunate in high school. We had a good team, and I had a lot of good players around me.
Do you have coaches now that you look at like you would as a player and a quarterback that you go, man, I like the way that dude coaches? Or I know Nick is one of them, but the others.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's really, I mean, I Sometimes it's difficult from afar to know what a coach is really like, so it's hard not to stick to guys you've been around every day. But like I thought my high school coaches were awesome. You know, like my head coach Kenny Dallas, offensive coordinator Wayne Brantley, Robbie Ross was on our staffs for a long time. Like those guys like were awesome coaches, and they've had a lot of success. And then it's hard. You know, it's funny, my dad coached me when I was a kid. You know, he coached all my baseball teams, and we won a bunch. I got more trophies in baseball than I can count. And he was a really good coach. You know, he really was. And there's a lot, and I'm not just saying this because he was my dad. Like, there's a lot I learned from him in how he coached, how he ran a practice, how he touched people, interacted with them, motivated them. And he was tough, too. He was no nonsense. And so there are a lot of things I learned from my dad. And then, obviously, it's funny, when I got around Coach Saban, I go, you know, I think if my dad would have stayed in coaching, there are a lot of traits that are similar. And I'm not kidding, like, just in terms of just some demeanor things. I go, that's kind of funny. But I learned, obviously, a tremendous amount from Coach Saban, because I think he doesn't embody those three things I talk about: teach, demand, relationship. He's someone that definitely, in a lot of areas, want to emulate. But I will tell you this. I got to know a guy named Johnny Parker, who was Bill Parcells' strength coach at the Giants.
Yeah.
And he shared this with me recently. He said that when he took a job at the Giants the year before, I think Parcells won 3 games, and he hires Johnny to be the strength coach. But he told him this. He said, hey, last year I tried to be the head coach of the Giants. This year I'm going to be Bill Parcells. And I think that's important to try to not – you know, maybe there's principles you take from other people, but don't be someone you're not.
And finally, to wrap up, what would that be for you initially? And that'll, there's still going to be fluidity and growing into that.
Right.
But as of today.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's, again, I'm going to go.
If I'm a recruit, man, what are you telling me?
Yeah, look, to me, I mean, one, you know, it is the three things I talk about, is that we are going to build a relationship with each other. You're going to know me. I'm going to know you. I care about you. And it's bigger than just football. And then two, you know, we want to develop you. You know, and when we talk about developing players, we talk in terms of two different areas. One, as an individual, and two, we still want to build a team. And by the way, the more kids I talk to that are jumping around in the portal and have been on 4 different teams, they all crave right now being on a team.
Yeah.
They want that. You know, this age of individualism, which there's a lot of positives that have come with it, they miss that and want that. And so look, it's our objective to create a team here, and I want the guys we're recruiting to know that. And then in terms of development, you know, we try to develop guys in 4 areas, you know, and maybe more than that, but 4 big areas. One, we want to help you develop, your general physical development through strength and conditioning, power, speed, nutrition, which we're going to improve here, specific physical development. Those are your specific skills to play in your position. We're going to have a better plan, or the best plan possible, to do that.
Right.
And then the third thing is the mental part of it, is we're going to do a great job teaching you the game, all 3 phases. And then finally, you know, the intangibles. You know, I think all 4 of those things are really important. We're going to give them all equal effort, and then we're going to have a 12-month plan to do it. And so I think one of the things, and the reason I bring up development, I think a lot of people right now and a lot of coaches can get fixated on 2 things, recruiting and scheme. I'm going to recruit and scheme, and we've lost sight of player development. And football is a developmental game, and these guys are at a developmental stage of their life. It's part of why I got drawn to college football, is I've always been excited about trying to find better ways to teach, better ways to train a guy so they can develop. So that's really something that's important to us, and I would want the players we're recruiting to know that we're committed to that.
Good stuff. Alex, thanks.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Alex Mortensen, head football coach with the UAB Blazers. We'll take a break. Come back with more on the Inferno Podcast.
The if in life, it's a world of possibilities. If you go for a night out with friends, if you can keep an eye on your money along the way, if you know you have overdraft protection with no fee transfers from savings, when you get a low balance alert, it's easier to say yes to fun. If that sounds good, try Regions Life Banking.
Stay ready for the FN life. Regions Bank embrace the FN life.
Welcome back to the Inferno Podcast. Time now for This Week in Blazer Nation, of course, brought to you by the Children's of Alabama. It's all hoops. Now, I love hoops, so I have no problem with it, and you probably don't either. A lot of stuff going on right before Christmas as far as basketball. As we take a look at the schedule, women's basketball taking on Mississippi Valley State on December 20th at 2 o'clock. Then that Sunday, the men will host UNC Asheville. That's another 2 o'clock game, and that's kind of the normal times for weekend games a lot of times till we get to conference, and it'll be moved to nighttime a lot of times. Then Monday, the 22nd, women take on Samford. That's 11 o'clock. You can't even call that a noon lunchtime deal. It's a little bit before, 11 o'clock game, but that'll be pretty good, the women versus Samford. Christmas break coming up. Everybody gets off and enjoys the family. We'll come back right before the first of the year, December 30th, the women's team at East Carolina. That's a 5 o'clock tip-off. And then on New Year's Eve, the men against Wichita State. That'll be a great game to take a break from eating and watching football and all this and come watch some great basketball at the arena. 3 o'clock, the men against Wichita State. So, again, that's your This Week in Blazer Nation brought to you by Children's of Alabama. Thanks to Alex Mortensen for hanging out with us on this episode. Learned a lot about him, and I think UAB made the right choice in making him the head coach of the Blazers. For all the guys that helped put this together, Scott Griffin saying so long. We'll see you next time on the Inferno Podcast.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.